Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. The fastest growing Oilers podcast on the internet, Bruce.
Is that right?
We're crushing it on YouTube, man. We're the That's kings fantastic. Of YouTube. Here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome.
Hey.
So, Bruce, some interesting news today. You know, I haven't put much stock in the maybe the Oilers are going to move out Milan Lucic rumors this summer. But I'm seeing one rumor that's making a lot of sense, and it was kind of brought up by Milan Lucic himself today.
That makes that adds a little bit of credence to it, doesn't it?
Sure does. So Milan Lucic was on Vancouver Radio, I think either today or tomorrow, Sportsnet's 650, and he was asked what about maybe finishing your career in Vancouver one day, Milan? You know, he had started out as a Vancouver Giant, grew up there. And here's what Lucic said, and it's a fairly long quote, and I'll give you most of it here. Here's what he said. That's definitely something I wouldn't rule out. It's obviously something that could potentially happen. Like you said, things haven't gone well for me here with the Oilers, especially the last year and a half. So a new GM, new coach, which haven't been named yet coming in. You don't even know what their plan is moving forward and stuff like that. Like I said, it's definitely something that could potentially happen. So Bruce, he was asked, if he would finish out his career here down the road in Vancouver. And the interesting thing to me was Lucic brought that right into the present day and talked about this happening right now. And so that's the first thing that really got my attention. What's your initial take on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, he talked about the current situation with the Oilers and the management change. And I think the idea was putting it in the light of not knowing where the new management might go and how the new management might be wanting to move him along, you know, like, I would say there's a pretty high possibility that they might want to do that. But he did put it in today's case, and he also talked about Vancouver's exciting young team and so on, kind of same stuff he used to say about Edmonton there about 3 years ago. And he's from Vancouver, played for the Vancouver Giants the last time they had a powerhouse team, and they have one again now, so maybe the Ducks are aligning.
So, Bruce, as you know, the last summer, of course, there was an ongoing melodrama and drama about, you know, whether Lucic would stay with the team and rumors and talk about the situations with Lucic and the Oilers wasn't tenable. And at that point, it seemed like, you know, that Lucic was the unhappy partner here and you know, he couldn't possibly stand another day. Now, I think it's the Oilers who might be thinking this is not tenable. It's time to move Lucic out. And of course, the problem is he's got 4 years left on a contract, which $6 million per. He's at best a fourth line player right now, I think. He's had ample opportunities with McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins. He has not nearly lived up to expectations, let alone being a $6 million player a year. He's not even a solid two-way hockey player anymore. He's a fourth line guy. He deserved to be in the press box at times last year. He's got a no-movement contract. His contract is buyout, essentially buyout-proof. There's very limited advantage you get from buying out. So I've been very kind of glum about the whole situation. But hearing that got me looking into the Vancouver situation, their particular set of circumstances, Bruce, and I'm now thinking this is a real possibility. This could really happen. So do you want me to go into my reasons, or do you any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I got some thoughts to share at some point, but yeah, I mean, his contract, I've referred to it as the four horsemen of the apocalypse of contracts, because it's got term, it's got cap hit, it's got no movement clause, and it's got all of that buyout proofing bonus structure. So there's really, it's got you surrounded, right? No matter which way you turn, there's some big club waiting for you saying, well, if you do this, it's just going to cost you. And even the buyout is just not a viable option. It's not a very good option for the guy most rumored, I think, in the past to maybe be a reasonable exchange for Lucic, which would be Louis Eriksson. And he's also got a crappy buyout situation for at least 2 years.
Oh, I didn't even look at that. But so okay, Louis, here's why. This is one of my reasons, so you got to it. So Vancouver has Louis Eriksson. He's going to be 34. He's 3 years older than Lucic. Mm-hmm. Lucic turns 31. Eriksson turns, if I'm not mistaken, and Eriksson turns 34 this summer. Eriksson is a finesse winger, 34 years old. He scored 11 goals in 81 games for the Canucks last year. This is the new normal for Louis Eriksson. He used to be 20, 30 goal scorer a year. He's now a 10 goal scorer a year at best. And he's clearly on his last. I don't remember. We saw the Canucks play last year. I don't really remember him at all on the ice. I think he's kind of like 30. He's like Tobias Reeder level, Ty Ratty level hockey player at this point. So a fourth liner as well. He has 3 years left on that deal at $6 million per. So the Oilers would get 1 year less of a really mm-hmm. crappy contract.
Yep.
That's super significant. That's really that's not nothing. That's something. Bruce has got some. He's got it's either the dog or the cat. The dog or the cat. Let's place our bets. I'm gonna go with the cat. Bruce, was it the cat or the cat or the dog, Bruce? It was the
dog.
Lost my bet.
She hates the door. If the door is open, she'd lay in her basket for 4 hours. As soon as I close it, she wants to be on the other side of it.
My cat is the same way. My cat will thump against the bedroom door for like 20 minutes to get in. Okay. So I was going on about Louis Eriksson's contract. Yep. So here's the thing, Bruce. Mm-hmm. When you look at Eriksson's contract, his age, his productivity, he's actually got, I think, more negative value than Lucic has.
Yep.
Except for the 1 year thing. So maybe that evens it out. Is that enough to even it out? But as a player, Lucic, is there any hope he's going to be more like than what he is? Could he bounce back? I mean, I don't see it, but he does offer, Bruce, for a specific team that has a bunch of small finesse hockey players they're worried about getting beat up and banged up, that lacks an enforcer. Lucic has some allure, I believe. Now, that alert increase if the general manager was someone who has fond memories of Milan Lucic from being on the management team that saw Milan Lucic at his prime, and who 3 years ago offered Milan Lucic a major, major contract, and who 3 years ago called Milan Lucic a unique player and was hot after this guy and desperate for him and didn't get him. Could that team, the Vancouver Canucks with Jim Benning, still have a shine for Milan Lucic? Because Vancouver also has two, you know, they don't have any obvious tough guys. They traded Gudbranson. Antoine Roussel's not a tough guy. He's an agitator. They don't have that tough guy player on their roster. They have slender Elias Pettersson, who got knocked around and injured last year. They have little Quinn Hughes, same boat. I could see that team, Bruce, actually having a lot of desire. And that general manager having a lot of desire to bring in Milan Lucic. Does that resonate with you?
Elias Pettersson, he got banged around quite a lot last year. And I can well imagine if I was a Canuck fan, I'd be good and sick and tired of that by about halfway through the season, the second or third time he got knocked out of the lineup with borderline cheap shots, call it rough treatment. And I know some will poo-poo the argument about McDavid and Lucic, but the fact remains that Lucic played 3 years in Edmonton and McDavid never missed one game to injury in all that time. And he did get hurt in game 82, and Lucic happened not to be playing that game, which you can make out of that what you will. Anyway, it was... that was part of the reason he was brought on board, and it would be part of the reason he would be brought on board to some other team, whatever team.
Oh, it would be the main reason the Canucks would go for him, and who knows? Like, and you know what? It doesn't matter what. There's a whole faction of fans who think the intimidation factor isn't important in hockey. You just go for skill, skill, skill. You don't worry about team toughness and grit intensity and all that. And like, they're fine. Like, you can believe that, and I think there's a lot of. There's a lot to that worldview of hockey. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not against it, Bruce, but it doesn't matter what they think in this case. What matters is what Jim Benning thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And who cares? Like the critics can wail and whine all they want about fighting has no place in the game, or a player like Lucic has no value. Doesn't matter. What matters is, what does Jim Benning think of Milan Lucic? And and 3 years ago, he thought enough to offer a major, 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 as much as the Oilers to Lucic, saw him as a unique player. Obviously someone, I think, who, unless he's completely turned it around and changed his mind, I think is a kind of an old school hockey guy who values toughness. That's what matters here in terms of the Oilers finding a trading partner. And that's why I have my hopes up too, because I see Benning as that kind of old school hockey guy, and rightly or wrongly.
Well, if they're moving him for Louis Erickson, I mean, how far ahead are you getting? You know, Louis's getting, as you say, he scored 30 goals this last year in Boston before he went on the market, and he timed it perfectly, and he did get that $6 million a year AAV, and they've actually paid, I think, 22 million of the 36 already, and he scored 11, 10, and 11 goals 3 years in Vancouver. So as you say, that's definitely his new level. So if you're trading one $6 million boat anchor contract for another $6 million boat anchor contract, how much further ahead are you? Maybe you're sick of the sight of the guy and you're willing to give somebody else a fresh chance. But Louis Erickson...
Would you do that deal, Bruce? Would you trade...
34 years old? I mean, the extra year has got... you got rid of the contract 1 year earlier. And I think in Erickson's case, you could actually buy him out for the last year. It's just the first two you save less off the cap hit than it would cost you to replace him with a minimum salary player, right? So that doesn't really
Louis Erickson cap.
That doesn't really float my boat. So
that's one thing I need to into here. So does he have a no movement clause as well?
He does, and it gets reduced to 15 teams. So he'd have to agree with it as well as Lucic. But chances are both of them might be anxious to take a fresh start somewhere else after a poor experience when they're on their current teams.
Oh, geez, both of these guys. Yeah, on Erickson's last year, he's got that buyout-proof deal, except for the last year where it's $3 million bonus and $3 million salary.
Yeah.
Is that it? So it's a little less.
But basically they did the same thing with the big bonuses, right? So... He's got a bonus of $4 million this year, $3 million next, and only $1 million the last one. And so the bonuses are invulnerable to the buyout, right?
So the Oilers and the Canucks may decide to do it. It depends how untenable the situation is for both teams, whether they're like how keen they are, how keen the players. It sounds like Lucic is definitely open to this. May actually be pushing for it, who knows? And so there's that. So you just might want to shuffle the deck a little bit, and the Oilers would get the benefit then of having one last year. Now, Bruce, the Canucks are in such an excellent cap position in a lot of ways. The interesting thing to me is, would they want Lucic enough to make this deal without moving the Erickson contract? Now that's where it
now
really
you're
gets
talking
interesting. Now we're talking. And so do they have, other poison pills, like one other lesser poison pill that they might want to get
Ryan
rid of?
Spooner.
He's just got 1 year left.
I know.
So we don't know about that. But they don't have, they have like Pettersson and Quinn are on entry level contracts. They're going to have to sign up. They're going to have to sign up their Brock Besser, who is a RFA, and he's going to get some money, and they got to sign Alex Edler. He's going to get some money. But other than that, they have a couple players to sign a year from now. They have Troy Stetcher and the goalie Markstrom and one more defenseman Tanev a year from now. They're in a very good cap position. They got lots of wiggle room. So they don't even necessarily have to, if they wanted Lucic bad enough, and they thought Lucic could actually help their team and provide them with an element that they need. If they think, there could be some other trade other than Erickson, is what I'm saying, where the Oilers would give up like a second round pick in Lucic, for instance. And that would be the deal.
Right.
Do you think that would be enough?
Probably not, but I mean,
but if they want them, like,
I mean, if they want them, and I mean, there's also this deal where if you trade him after July 1st, the Oilers eat his bonus next year, even as his prospective new team would eat the cap hit. But that would reduce the actual out-of-pocket costs, which, but in Vancouver's case, I'm not sure that's as big of an issue as it might be on some teams. Like, it was Ottawa Senators or something, you know, they're always looking to save their pennies as much as possible. On the other hand, what I'm hearing out of the Oilers is that Cates is trying to save some pennies too, so he might not necessarily be willing to eat the extra dollars that much either.
So we're both Oilers fans, so we're biased, and we're probably hoping the Oilers get a better deal. You know, I read a Canucks blog yesterday where they were proposing Erickson, with the Oilers having to throw in some sweeteners to get Erickson from the Canucks. So you know, that's how a Canucks, you know, if you've got your Canucks goggles on, that's how you're looking at it. And if you have your Oilers goggles on, you're probably thinking, well, the Canucks are in a worse position here, and they might be willing to take them. But I just think there's something here to work with. Let's put it that way. Let's just leave it there. Who knows what the deal might be, but it looks like there's enough. There's a team with a need. There's a player with a no movement clause who now seems willing, at least from his end, to go to Vancouver. So this has the air of reality in a way that other things have not had. And this could be a real possibility. I think this is a story with a trade rumor with some legs to it.
Yeah. Well, and of course, he's from Vancouver, played for Vancouver Giants, won Memorial Cup there, has some experience with success in Vancouver, which not many hockey players can say, actually. Oh, that was mean. And he's... So it's not something he would necessarily turn aside. And like I say, he may well be just desperate to move on because the Edmonton experiment has not worked out well.
Okay, here's one for you, Bruce. Lucic for Brandon Sutter. Sutter played just 26 games.
He always gets
hurt.
Got
2 years left at $4.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Oilers would probably jump at that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Sutter, he's probably overpaid, but nowhere close to the same level of overpay. So Oilers would have to sweeten the pot for that.
And a third-line center, right?
Like, but there's no way you're moving Lucic without getting some big contract back. I just don't see how you can swing it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. All right, the Oilers also signed Ryan McLeod today, Bruce. What do you think of that?
Well, I was a little surprised they didn't sign him at the end of training camp, but I think there was some of the fine print in the CBA about the age of the player when he actually signs a contract that was in the player's interest not to sign for a while, so the Oilers couldn't slide him back to junior next year. Anyway, now they've got him on a 3-year ELC, which kicks in the fall. He gets just an ATO to see him through. This is a pretty common deal. Guys come out of college, they give him an ATO to finish this season, and then they give him a real contract that starts next year. And that's what he gets. And
it's only if you have the real leverage that you get that eaten year up, you know. It's only if you're like, you know, they really, really want you.
You're a college hotshot.
All kind of leverage. And, and McLeod, how does it work with, like, To go back in the draft for someone his age,
I don't think he would. It's 2 years later, and in the case of a late birthday like McLeod, he's only 1 year before he's basically an overager for junior next year.
Are you saying your understanding is that McLeod can't go back to junior next year then?
Oh, they could send him back, but I don't think he probably wants to. I think he probably wants to turn pro. And if they send him back, they have to count him on the 50-man list now because he was 19 when he signed this deal.
I see. Gregor was talking about this, and I thought he made a good point. Like, some NHL teams are sending these guys back.
Yep.
In this year would be his fifth year, because it's really good for them if they're not going to get a lot of playing time in the NHL, it's just confidence is so crucial to a hockey player, and I completely agree with Jason Gregor on this. Confidence is everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so fundamental. I mean, you got to have skill and everything else and all of these other things, but confidence is such integral to a player's success. And it's not a terrible idea. If that's your prime consideration in development. And if you think that he's not going to get playing time in the AHL, that you would send him back because he'll play first line center. He'll get all kinds of points. But I don't think McLeod will be not getting playing time in Bakersfield next year.
Yeah,
I think it would be a failing of Jay Woodcroft if that was the case. He's clearly ready to play pro hockey from what I've seen. He's big and he's fast. He seemed like he was almost close to making the Oilers this year. He was so big and fast, and McClellan liked those aspects of his game so much at the time. He'll at least be the third line center in Bakersfield next year. And with if Benson moves up, if either Gambardella or Russell move up, and one of the two will, I think, be moving up, there's going to be a role in the top six that Maximov and McLeod will compete for. And Ostap Safin, who's really done poorly in junior this year, they'll all be competing for that job. So I think I see him in the AHL this year. And the interesting thing is, again, you're going to see him in the playoffs. Are you looking forward to that?
Well, they probably will roll him out there at some point. It depends a little bit on the health status of Cooper Marody.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing 11 forwards, not necessarily because they're shorter forward, but because they wanted to get the seventh defenseman, Evan Bouchard, into the cycle. So they already have Cameron Hebig waiting in the wings. And if they keep with 11 forwards, they may just bring McLeod along for the ride. But I suspect he'll get in there at some point. You know, the thing about sending him back to junior as a 20-year-old, he's played now as 16, 17, 18, 19, 62-plus games every year. Like, I'm not sure what in the heck he's going to learn out of a fifth-year junior. This year he played in two different organizations. He got a bit of a playoff run. I think his time in junior is done, and he's probably ready for the pro game. I mean, he's like less than a week away from being eligible for the previous draft to last year. So,
yeah, as good as Gregor's point was, and I think it was a really excellent one, I do think that in this case with this player, it looks like his development is kind of flatlined in junior as well. He doesn't seem to be improving his point scoring, at least. Maybe other aspects of his game are improving, but I don't see, and his point scoring also doesn't support the notion that he'll be a
top six
NHL forward. He's got to go to Bakersfield and start to learn to check at the pro level.
Yeah.
And check a third line checking role in Bakersfield or a second line two-way player role seems reasonable expectation for Ryan McLeod. And I do think, you know, Cameron Hebig got off to a great start. He had a point a game for like the first 15 games, and then completely has not done that well. He's been in and out of the lineup. So I could see McLeod going in ahead of Hebig. It's not like Logan Day. Like they have a little trouble justifying to themselves and to Day and to the team taking Logan Day out of the lineup because he's been a good player for them and putting Bouchard in there. They don't have that issue with Hebig. And it sounds like Kyler Yamamoto's not coming back this year, that he's got a wrist injury.
They keep saying day to day, but he doesn't seem to get any closer.
You could be missing a limb and Jay Woodcroft would be saying that you're day to day. He's completely inaccurate in his day to day.
Yeah, that's a concern with Cooper Marody. They said day to day, and right away I assumed the worst.
Yeah, I don't trust Woodcroft at all. He just he just completely lies. He does. Mm-hmm. He's been saying Yamamoto's been day to day, and he's got a wrist injury that needs surgery. I mean, so come on, it's been day to day for half a year. It seems all year long. Maybe that's the truth, but
anyway, Ryan McLeod at 6'3", 205, and he can skate like the wind. That's his biggest plus. He really is a fluid skater for such a big man. But you know, this year in his fourth full year junior, he scored 19 goals, right? Yeah. Playing with two different teams. What he really projects as is a bottom six guy, hopefully one that's a great penalty killer, because if I mentioned the Oilers need penalty killers, I think the Oilers need some penalty killers, and they need to be developing some, and they need to be finding some way or another.
So
by the way, one of the things about Louis Erickson, which we didn't mention, is he does kill penalties a little bit, which Lucic never has.
And we don't know if he's any good at it, but he does do that. So Bruce, his McLeod's road to the NHL is, he's got to learn to check, he's got a PK, and he's got to win faceoffs.
And if
he does those three things with great determination and skill at the AHL level, he could, he, it's going to take, I think, at least a year at the AHL level.
Oh, yeah.
Probably two. But he, once he gets down those things, it's not like he's got to come to the NHL and score even 30 points. He's got to get 20 points in the NHL and do those things. And that could happen for this player. He could be in the NHL, not this coming year, but the year after that.
Well, last time the Oilers had number 40 overall draft pick, it was Anton Lander. And these things, I mean, they tried to airlift him directly into the NHL. Yeah. And I think they basically helped ruin that guy to some degree with that poor decision. And hopefully we're beyond that point. But I think anytime you're talking about even a second round player, I mean, there with the extremely, exceedingly rare exceptions like Patrice Bergeron or
Ryan O'Reilly
that made it as 18-year-olds out of the second round, which is still unbelievable to me how they got through. But I don't see Ryan McLeod as being anywhere near that kind of player. And even a good second-round player, you know, Tyler Pitlick was a decent second-round player. It just takes time. Like, they're not ready to just make the jump, like two-level jump from CHL to NHL. And you've got to expect an apprenticeship period. And he's right now, signed today, he's where he needs to be in Bakersfield for the foreseeable future.
And there's no room for him in Edmonton with Brandon Sutter coming in for Milan Lucic anyway.
No, that's right. That's right. That 3C position is flipped after now, finally.
Just looking at Brandon Sutter's stats here. So 6 points in 26 games last year, minus 12.
That's hard to do in 26 games.
Anyway. You and I both put a little weight in that plus minus stats.
Well, I put weight in outscoring, and plus minus is the canary in the coal mine of outscoring. It needs to be investigated further, but it just gives it. Did the guy get crushed when he was out there? If he went minus 12 in 26 games, then yes, he probably did get crushed.
It doesn't sound, but maybe the Lucic for Sutter trade now takes on a little bit more air of reality. So Bruce, let's finish off with a quick discussion on Oilers GM candidates, and it's something that you and I don't really talk about that much on the podcast because neither of us are in any way insiders. We're just
We should have Kurt for this,
and neither of us, neither of us. Do much digging in like to the record and the back, we're kind of fans, knowledgeable fans, so we kind of know, but we're not someone who parses their records and looks has been going over their draft picks, although I did do that with Mark Hunter, and you know, it's kind of a mixed record. It's not great. He did get what's that defenseman for Toronto, Demko?
Yeah, I know the guy.
He got Marner, but that's, you know, Mitch Marner was such a fantastic hockey player. He was just such, to me, I was watching him and I thought, wow, that's the guy I'd like too. So I'm just a fan sitting there thinking that. I don't think it was brain surgery to draft Mitch Marner, honestly, but the Dermott pick was good. But you know, other than that, there's not a whole lot that screams at you like, oh, this guy's a draft genius. So do you have any thoughts at all on the GM thing, Bruce, or any?
Well, I mean, I'm with you. To some degree, I treat it the same way as who the Oilers should draft in the first round, right? And some people they adopt somebody and say, well, there's no way they should let so-and-so go past number eight. And it's a name, and it's not.
Remember Team Sam Bennett against Team Leon Draisaitl?
I sure do.
I mean, and then there was like, what was the, what are some of the other ones we've had?
Well, Taylor versus Tyler was
team
the
team Tyler versus one. Team. We've had team. One of my favorite ones was Team Nugent Hopkins versus Team Couturier. Remember that one? I think
Team Couturier still got a pretty good case today, I got to say.
Yeah. And so they often do, but what do I know? Like, what do we?
Yeah. Well, that's right.
So I tried to get involved. Like for a few years, I started to like, okay, I'm going to watch these players play five games. And it's like all, and I realized that is as misleading as anything. Like, forget it. You can't. You can get a little bit of a sense of the hockey player watching that much. But to go on the record and say, I think they should take Sergachev over Pierre-Luc Dubois, based on watching them that amount of games, I backed off that as well. I don't think that's a very good way to go. So in this GM thing, like, what, honestly, what do we know? Like,
what I know,
someone's failing a little bit. Like, Ken Holland seems to be a little bit long in the tooth in terms of, you know, that's setting off a few alarm bells. But other than that, like, we can't be the judge of this. We can be the judge, I think, of who's making the judgment and the process a little bit.
Yeah.
But that guy, Bob Nicholson, he's the one who's got to get this right. He's the one in place to get this right. And I'm not going to take a strong opinion when he makes the decision, because I can't tell.
Show me. Yeah, show me. I mean, I did the same thing with Peter Chiarelli. I thought, okay, we got an experienced NHL GM. He's come in. He's taken over the reins. He's adopted a pretty good situation. Let's give him the keys and let him drive for a year or two without instantly ripping every decision. And of course, one of his very early decisions was one of his worst in the two high draft picks for Griffin Reinhart. And some people started ripping that right away. And turns out they were right. Thought it was a bad trade. But I mean, to some extent, we're bystanders, right? Now, I will say the process has got to be better, and by all appearances it is better. It's not, oh, look, Peter Chiarelli just fell out of a tree in Boston, let's go grab him right away and forget any rest of the process. They are going through, they're interviewing, sounds like they're interviewing couple times each. They're taking their time, they're trying to get it right.
There is no Chiarelli-like candidate.
They need to get it right.
Well, they sure do. I mean, let's face it. Okay. I talked to Patrick LaForge, who I've known for a long time now. And we were asking him, okay, I was asking him, what does it cost the Oilers? Like, what would a Stanley Cup bring to Darryl Cates? This isn't, Bruce, it's in the hundreds, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, okay? Because it's not just the 1 year where you get all those playoff dates. It's the carryover that lasts for years. You sell it out for years based on that. This is for Darryl Cates and for Bob Nicholson, who are running this business. This is like and considering the stakes with McDavid staying or going, this is like a $200, $300, $400 million decision. Like, it's seriously... Yeah. It is that much money on the line if they get it wrong. If they get it wrong and McDavid says, I want out in 2 years, you've lost $200, $300 million. And so they better get this right. And they better just be turning over every stone, doing everything they can and getting it right. So that's and do I think they're doing that? It seems like they are. Seems like they are.
As it stands, I mean, they painted themselves into a corner. You know, I'm watching with great interest this season ticket renewal campaign that finally kicked off yesterday after a considerable delay, because I've heard from a lot of people that are season ticket holders that are thinking, if not have outright decided to not renew. And once you get on that train where there's seats available within the arena, that changes the equation. We saw that happen here in the mid-90s when the team went into the tank. And there was, at that time, you know, there was considerable repercussions, but it was not uncommon to go to a game for a while there with empty seats in the building. Can have that and be competitive in a cap hit league. I mean, the expenses are just too high. But between the team continuing to suck, you know, year after year, this year was just a crushing disappointment to me as an Oilers fan. Just, I mean, how can they let that happen 2 years in a row after finally seeming to have a breakthrough? And how can they have such pathetic depth on a team when they got such core cornerstone players to build around? It's so extremely frustrating. And you wind up they're really on the knife edge right now. It could go one of two ways, and one of those ways is not at all good. And you know, they're basically already there. The team had an immense amount of goodwill in this community. And a lot of it's been frittered away. I'm sorry to say it, but that's how I see it.
It's the truth, man. It is the truth. It is the truth. It is brutal sometimes to be a fan of this hockey team. And this year was a tough one. I personally think I've had tougher years as a fan. I think that the Aikens years were really, really, because there came to be some point, Bruce, where you realize, like, they're just I just feel like cursing here, but like this Taylor Hall, Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov, Eberle group, Justin Schultz group. When that moment really sunk in, they're not getting it done. This group, they're not up to it. Like whatever is going on here, this group of players with this management team, and you don't have to necessarily just blame. Those are the peaks of the waves, the top of the mountains, but it could be the mountain. The base of the mountain, which was infirm, which was the case, in fact. But that was the hardest year for me. I think 2013, 14, 2014 just was brutal.
Okay.
But I still have hope, Bruce, with McDavid and Draisaitl. So I'd
go
still,
back.
Yay, McDavid and Draisaitl.
I go back to the Shane Corson era Oilers when they traded all their stars for lesser players, and then they turned around and traded those lesser players for even lesser players, right? Because they traded with Toronto to get Vince Danfus, and then they turned around and traded out Vince Danfus to bring in Shane Corson. And it just seemed like every move that was made was a downgrade. And the team was not a lot of fun to watch. Whereas the current team, whatever else you can say about the team, which is a lot of bad things, they have two phenomenal, two of the very best hockey players in the world we have in Edmonton to watch. And they have to be the magnet. But, man, they got to give those guys a little support and a little room to breathe and to have some success here. And that's, 4 years into McDavid's career to still be stuck on this point is really inexcusable.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about the 90s, and I was – was a columnist then and wrote some pretty savage columns attacking Peter Pocklington at the time. And you know what, Bruce, there was a couple of years there where I stopped watching the Oilers.
A lot of people did.
I so like I'm saying, this is like the darkest time was the Aikens era. Well, I was watching those games. Of course, we were writing about them, and it's now part of my work. So that's it's a little different, but I might've quit, but no, I might've stopped watching if it wasn't, but I did stop watching them for a few years, just casually following them. And, I was following them, but not really that in.
Well, they were a very interesting team. I mean, they had teams. I mean, they had 1 year where they had 10 first-round draft choices in the lineup.
Yeah, but they had Sven Butenschuk.
That was the dumbest hockey team I've ever seen. They had talent, but, man, they just didn't have, they didn't like play a real – not any one player. They just had, they had just had a lot of guys. They had, let me think now. Dave Manson was on a team, and he's turned out to be a good coach. But as a player, I sometimes questioned his decision making. Let's put it that way. They had Michel Petit on that team, and he was a guy that looked like $1 million. But
Barry Fraser's drafting in the 1990s may have been the longest extended run of shitty drafting in NHL history, Bruce. Like it was just as we owe Barry Fraser so much. Yeah. Like we need to every day. Like he's the forgotten man of Oilers hockey. No one talks about Barry Fraser that much. We do, but you hardly ever hear is a few old time guys like you and Low Tide probably talk about him. But he hardly ever gets mentioned. He's the guy. He's the guy who drafted those players. He just had the biggest run of success any drafting wizard has ever had in NHL history ever. And then he went from that to being the worst guy for 15 years. He went on a run that which is probably unparalleled for being crappy, useless, terrible in drafting.
Well, the 1990 draft, which was occurred just a couple of weeks after Edmonton's last Stanley Cup in 1990, of course. And that was the year where they went 12 rounds deep, and Edmonton picked 12 guys, and not one of them played a single NHL game. Hardly any of them played more than a handful of games in the AHL. Not one player that they even traded out to bring in another asset. Like they literally got nothing out of that draft. 1990. They drafted one guy that wasn't even valid. The pick got invalidated. It was just sheer incompetence. And Barry Fraser kept his job for 10 years after that.
Okay. So we're going to end off with this, Bruce. I'm just going to go with their first round draft picks after 1984. Okay. I'm going to read them off to you. Okay. Salmar Odelin, Scott Metcalf, Kim Issel, Peter Soberlak, Francois Leroux, Jason Soles, Scott Allison, Tyler Wright, Joe Hulbig, Jason Arnott, and Nick Stajduhar, Jason Bond Sr. and Ryan Smith, Steve Kelly, Boyd Devereaux and Matthew Dakoto, Michelle Reeson, Yanni Rita, Alexei Mikhnov. And I think Mikhnov might have been the first of the new era.
How was the Kevin Rowe pick?
So we had two players. Well, Tyler Wright became something of an NHLer, and of course, Arnott and Smith.
Yeah, Rusinski, he was in there as a first rounder somewhere too. But they traded him after two games with the Oilers.
Yeah. Man, can you believe that list though? I mean, it was.
No, I can believe it. I lived all through all those guys.
Did I miss Michael Herrick? Did I say his name? I think I missed
I'm not sure that you did, but he fits in the big, aggressive, often slow. Often not a lot of what they now call hockey IQ. And I remember there was a great quote from Ted Green, who was a coach somewhere in there in the 90s. And one time he went on radio, because I can't find this quote, but I'm sure I heard Ted Green say it. And he said, if we draft another big, slow forward or another big, dumb defenseman, I'm going to lose it.
Speaking of big, I still remember my favorite draft story from that time period. It was Jim. It was probably Matty who wrote it. And he wrote something like, the Oilers have drafted Joe Hulbig. They call him Joe Big. Joe Big. And you know what, Bruce? I didn't know that Joe Big actually played 55 NHL games.
Yeah, he played some games. He was big.
Joe Big. 6'3", 215 pounds. Joe Big. All right, let's leave it there. Joe Baker, right. Go home.
Very good.
Thanks for talking, Bruce.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll have playoff hockey here starting on Friday night. Hey, we got the Friday Saturday with the Condors again. So
yeah,
the we'll big be back at it.
Call to hockey engine is revving up for that night. All right, they got the player grades, the scoring chances, and the podcast. It's like a military operation, Bruce. Thanks for talking again. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.